Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. Today, we're going to talk and see what's going on in the Libertarian Party and Libertarian movement from so many different perspectives. We're going to talk to candidates. We're going to talk to experts. Right now, we're going to talk to somebody who's running one of the most popular growing pages in the Libertarian movement. I'm talking about the Ask a Libertarian Facebook page. I know a lot of you guys have seen the stuff they put out. His name is Travis Hallman. He's from Alabama, and we're going to talk a little bit about what they're doing. Travis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the very high compliments and this opportunity. Thank you.
Now, you guys have been really helping educate people about some of the, you know, big and small and exciting and maybe not as exciting ideas about libertarianism. What are some of the things that are really catching on right now?
I'll say that within our Facebook page, the most commonly asked question would be, how does a free market create a more environmentally friendly business economy? So when you ask what is catching on, it seems to me that people are very concerned about the environment right now.
Interesting. Now, when people ask about that, I mean, that's not an easy one for libertarians to think about, because it's not as obvious. I mean, with something like the war on drugs, you're just like, yeah, stop doing it because it's stupid and it doesn't help anybody. We don't need the state to do it, and we don't need the private sector to do it. We don't need anybody to do it. But with the environment, it's a little different, isn't it? How are people explaining how libertarianism is actually better for the environment?
I'm glad you asked, because I would first like to point out that we have a team of libertarians behind the scenes at Ask a Libertarian, and each member is welcome to offer their individual perspectives to how the free market creates a more environmentally friendly business economy. Mm-hmm. Now, to elaborate on my personal perspectives, I would share with you that it encompasses three different attributes to the free market. The first would be opening opportunities for competition so that new business owners don't have to pay the government for permission to open a business, therefore allowing anybody to open a business right next to their competitor and compete, which creates, with competition, creates higher quality products and services at a lower cost to the consumer, and also without having to pay the government for permission to open a business, they now have more money to invest into their business to more efficiently compete. The second attribute would be removing taxation from those businesses, which would allow more money for that business to efficiently compete. Also, simultaneously, removing any incentive for crony capitalism, cronyism, which would be corporations partnering with government officials, because there would be no incentives for tax breaks or tax loopholes. And then the third, and in my opinion, possibly the most important attribute, is removing bailouts when government gives money to corporations or businesses after they have setbacks. Because businesses, as a business owner, I can share with you that businesses do have setbacks. It is unavoidable. And whenever businesses have setbacks, then that reduces the likelihood of becoming a monopoly, allowing more businesses to compete. And when businesses compete, like I was saying, the quality of the product goes higher, which in this generation, that means more green products at lower prices. So that's the explanation I'll offer. And typically, I'll even link a video to a Milton Friedman YouTube video where he explains it much more tactfully than I ever could.
It's really interesting, because people often forget that something that's environmentally friendly is probably going to be good in a few other ways, right? I mean, environmentally friendly often means it uses less electricity. All of our cell phones use less electricity than, you know, the old style computer monitors. And that's good because it allows them to have a longer battery life and, you know, we don't have to carry around a portable generator wherever we go and things like that. But that's an important fact that we can, if you get rid of all these other unnecessary costs, we can use higher end things. And the higher end things often just have less negative impacts on the environment. They're often very good for the environment. Well, what are some of the other really big areas that are catching on right now that you guys are seeing as you introduce so many people to the ideas of libertarianism?
Absolutely. So I would like to reference one of the questions that we were asked just today by a new fan that has never messaged us before. And he said, hello, I'm new to libertarianism. I'm familiar with the actions of President Obama for the last 8 years. If were any of those actions libertarian approved, and if so, which ones? And I really feel like that was a very appropriate question for me to answer, because at one point during the election cycle, this 2016 election cycle, I thoroughly investigated Obama's actions, and by seeking counsel through the libertarians at our page, and we had about 20, 30 libertarians, and I was deliberately trying to find something that he did that would be libertarian approved, and I must say there was only one thing that I found out of the entire 8 years that he served America, in which he pardoned approximately 50 non-violent drug offenders. Whereas most libertarians agreed that that number should have been very much higher. So I offered that response to the individual, and also we did post on our page that commendation of Obama pardoning the 50 individuals, and expressed that that number should be much higher. But we do try to find common denominators between ourselves and other parties so that those other parties can see more, have a more intuitive understanding of what libertarianism means through their all, through the knowledge they already have of other parties.
One of the really interesting things about that is you do make an interesting point that, you know, that it's, you know, it's 50. It's not, you know, the several, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions or whatever number it is. But what you bring up is an interesting point that there are a lot of areas in which the ideas of liberty have actually started to attract people from some of the other parties. What are some of the ideas that you're seeing are attracting people from either the Democratic or Republican Party?
That's a fantastic question, because I would like to elaborate on how much more, I'm going to choose the word radical, or maybe even extreme, libertarians can be. Okay, we can relate to Democrats or socialists or any of the blues in regards to civil liberties of body autonomy. And we can relate to Republicans and conservatives and constitutionalists whenever it comes to economics. But for people that prioritize economics, I would highly encourage them to vote libertarian, because we are so much more radical than Republicans and conservatives when it comes to economics and freeing the markets. And contrarily, those voters that prioritize civil liberties and things of body autonomy, I would recommend for them to vote libertarian as well, because we are much more extreme and radical in those regards as well, that we set liberty and freedom to the ideas that we may not even agree with. So because the best way to defend or to protect the choices in my life, from the freedom for me to make the choices in my life, is to protect the freedom of choice in your life in all regards. And that includes economy, that includes civil liberties, and even foreign intervention. And that's something I'm very proud to say. I believe we are the largest political party that consistently supports a non-interventionist foreign policy. And that's very attractive to anybody, most parties there. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Now, before we run out of time, I want to ask this. If somebody wants to learn more, if somebody want to get connected, they want to see what's happening on the Ask a Libertarian page, how should they follow you guys?
First, I would recommend for them to click the like button on our page, and then if they are very adamant about following us, they could click where it says follow, and that'll give them the option to go from default to see first, and then every time or most all of the postings that we make will show up on their news feed. And it's tactful for us to only post 3 to 4 postings per day, so we give equal opportunity to each post to have the maximum number of views, and we're not bombarding our fans with over posting. Furthermore, if the person does have a question that is important to them, then directly message us, and you'll get responses from at least one member, but typically 2 to 3, 4 members will respond with their individual perspectives with signatures at the bottom of each message so that there is no confusion on different. No one will think that we have a multiple personality disorder or anything like that. So we make sure we sign each message as well.
Awesome.
And yes, sir. Absolutely.
Awesome. Anyway, Travis, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Vora.
Guys, I just finished talking with Travis Hallman. He's one of the administrators in the Ask Libertarian Facebook page. You can follow them on Facebook to learn more about the Libertarian Party. Follow us at lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Why do some people seemingly make the same mistakes when it comes to love and relationships? What is the best way to find love? Make a visit each week to Destination Love. Host Shelley Pumphrey will bring what you need to know to find love. No, it's not about the next fad, dating site tips, scoring the first date, or looking your best. Rather, it's empowerment, knowing that your authentic self works best and the science behind finding love. Destination Love is live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Aaron Wright. He's been an activist in Illinois since 2009, and he was just elected to Park District Commissioner. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
So there's a bunch of questions I want to ask you. The first is the obvious. You know, what is it that a Park District Commissioner does, and how can you use that position to help fight for liberty?
Yeah, that's great. So the Park Commissioners sit on a board, and, you know, people around the country, their park districts may vary how they're structured, but basically we sit on a board and we do the administrative things for the district, such as levying taxes, setting the budget, engaging in borrowing at its worst, and just in general kind of guiding the park district to provide the park services and such to the people who are having their taxes collected by mm-hmm. the district.
And how can you use that position to advance liberty?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't even try to answer that. So here's the thing is that these park districts around the country, if you've never been to a park district meeting, you should really go. There's a really strange modus operandi going there. Mm-hmm. These guys really think that they're helping the community by providing after-school programs and the parks and everything, and they're investing in the children and doing these things. And it, because they believe that, they'll issue all kinds of bonds. They'll, you know, mortgage debt way into the future. And and so as a libertarian, you can get in there and say, no, we can't be laying taxes on the next generation today. That's wrong. And maybe we don't need a golf course, and maybe we don't need all these things. And a water park would probably prop up in the marketplace. We don't have to collect taxes in order to build one.
Mm-hmm.
So those types of things, you can be as a libertarian, you can be the voice in the room that says, no, these are market functions. This is not something that you tax people to do.
Now, how is that message going across? You know, with other people, I assume there's that you're not the only commissioner, right?
Absolutely. So I sit on a board of five commissioners, mm-hmm. and here's the thing about local politics is that you're going to have people from, you know, other political persuasions that you're going to find common ground with and maybe not at the same time. And you're not going to arrive to your conclusions from the same direction, perhaps, right? So there might mm-hmm. be some more conservative-leaning people that say, well, I'm against raising the tax levy. And, well, that's good. I'm against raising it as well. But, you know, I believe it's morally reprehensible, and they just think it's a little too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. But then if you can get in with a group, and I got very lucky in my own situation where I'm in a group where there are three people, so the majority of the board, that are trying to really undo a lot of the past debt and other things that have happened in the past. It's all going to depend on who else is there on the board and what point of view they're coming from. And so if you go out and get elected to a board that's all very progressive, you're gonna have a frustrating term for sure.
that is an interesting point. You know, it's really interesting what you said a couple of minutes ago, where you said that people might come to the same conclusion, but for different reasons, and maybe not in a parks, but there's definitely positions where there might be areas where we could work together with people who identify totally socialist, and we might be able to find something. You know, we might not have the same justification for it, but we might actually be able to agree. It's really interesting to think about things in that way. Tell me about your, you know, the race. You know, so many people want to know, you know, how do you win? How did you make it happen? So what was your campaign like? What do you think made it successful?
All right, well, this is the worst story I'm going to tell you, and anybody listening, just tune out now, I guess. So what happened was I've been involved with this, with our local affiliate. We're right on the other side of the river from St. Louis since 2009. I heard somebody say, I don't remember who it was, if you don't have candidates, you don't have a chapter. So we came together as a chapter, and we said, look, we're going to get as many people on the ballot as we can. And we had three people we were trying to get on the ballot. We only got one on, which would be myself, but we all worked together. We petitioned. We did everything. And then when it came time for the filing deadline, nobody actually filed against me. So here I thought, you know, I'm going to run this local race. We're going to learn something. Our chapter is going to do this whole campaign team, and we're going to build our experience base and move that into the next race for the next candidate. And then the bad news is we didn't get any of that, but the good news is we did get a seat on like a real board. So that's a positive.
Now, here's, I'm so happy to hear you say that. By the way, I didn't know you were going to say that, but I'm really happy to hear you say that, because this is one of the points that so many of us have been trying to drive home, which is sometimes you're going to run unopposed. There are many positions that fill unopposed, and once you're there, now you're there. Now you can start fighting for freedom. It doesn't matter how difficult the race. You know, some of the most important positions will get the least attention. Anyone who doesn't think that, for example, the Secretary of State of a given state, a lot of people think, well, who cares about that? I'll tell you who cares about that. Every single presidential election ever cares about that. I mean, all those positions are so important. You interact on a practical level with your local politicians. You don't really talk to the president that much unless you have a very different life from most people. So I'm just so happy to hear you say that just showing up sometimes it's half the battle, but sometimes it's just the whole battle.
Yeah,
go. People want to hear from you right now.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, so the thing about that, I mean, I say they, you know, that they forgot to leave the back door locked, basically. But the thing with that is the old parties do this to us all the time. You look around and you say, how did this person get this office? This, you know, who did they impress during a campaign? And you come to find out, nobody. They may have won with 5% of the vote that they received in a primary, and now they've got this really impressive, powerful office. Well, hey, if we can do that, we should. And then we're in there, and then we're getting our ideas out and using these boards and using these local governments as our own sort of platform, just in the way that everybody else has been using them all this time. We have got to take advantage of that if we can.
And that is so in. I mean, it's just dead on. That's exactly right. There are so many people who run for these positions that are, if you're listening to the show, these are the ones that are usually the most annoying to you. These are the people that say, here's what you can and can't do with your own land. These are the people who say, here's what you can and can't do with your own business. These are the people who create these random regulations you need to follow, the ones that prevent you from running your business or getting a job because the business that you would get employed by is wasting all its time and resources on this kind of nonsense. That's where it's coming from. A lot of this stuff, even here in D.C., a lot of this stuff, totally unopposed. In the capital city, the capital of the free world, whatever, totally unopposed. All over the country, you're going to see that happening. And when we take advantage of that, we see so many wonderful things happening. Let's talk about, have you been able to encourage other people or convince other people, either in Illinois or in other states, to try to jump on and try to do something similar?
Yeah, so that's been a growing thing in the Libertarian Party of Illinois that people are starting to recognize this, and we actually, I want to say that this past year we had a record number of local candidates, and going forward, looking into 2019, which upsets me a little bit, I want people to look at 2018, which we faced some significant hurdles for, but I think some of them are going to be worth it, but we do have a lot of people looking at 2019 saying, hey, I can do this in my local community. And I think I can't tell what's going to happen, but it should be a banner year for us here in Illinois in 19. So
now, here's something that's interesting. This is actually not the first time that this has been tried in the Libertarian Party. It actually was tried many years ago in California in the legendary Operation Breakthrough. And it worked then. I mean, every time it's been tried, it's worked. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those just surefire. You know, it sounds obvious, but you can't win if you don't show up. And sometimes it's all you need to do to win is to show up. Now let me ask you this: if somebody wants to learn more about your what you're doing, how they can get in contact with you, how you're fighting for freedom, they want to follow you on wherever, what's the best way for somebody to learn more about you?
Okay, well, our affiliate has a website. It's metro-eastlibertarians.com. Mm-hmm. And also, if you search for Metro East Libertarians on YouTube, you'll find some commentary from me there. And actually, my board position is going to create a decent amount of fodder for the YouTube channel as well. Mm-hmm. So some of it might not be that interesting because you're not involved with it, but I really think if people look at it, a little bit of it and say, you know, this is interesting. I wonder if this is going on in my community. I guarantee if you go to your board's meetings, you're going to see some really wacky stuff going on in there that's going to interest you as well.
Absolutely. So now, but just before you leave, if somebody says to you, but listen, Aaron, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a political science major. Can I run? What are you going to say? What do you say to people like that?
You know, a lot of this stuff that we're doing on this board, it's good experience in a way to see the inner workings of what's going on. I'm not a finance guy. I don't comb over these budgets and really pick out things that a finance person would. I'd actually hope that lawyers would get involved in local politics and put some common sense into their ordinances instead of what we have today. But I would put all that aside. It is a little bit of work once you get on the board. There are things that you're going to have to read over and prepare for the meetings and you've got to do an effective job. A lot of work went into getting these local bodies all twisted up the way they are, so a lot of work's going to have to go into getting them out. But I think just get in there. I mean, forget about that. Rely on your other affiliate personnel to help you out in your position. I mean, it's not going to be that bad. I think those fears are just going to, you'll find they're unfounded, and you can do it just as well as you can do your job or anything else you do.
Absolutely. Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
All right, sir. Thanks for having me.
Guys, we just finished talking with Aaron Wright. He is the elected Park District Commissioner in Illinois. And you heard what he said. What he had to do was show up, and what he needs to do now is fight for freedom. That is something that we can all do. That is something that you can do. That's something that I'm already working on doing in 2018, which is the next election over here in Maryland. But your state might have elections this year, or if they don't this year, maybe they'll have next year, or almost certainly they'll have next year. If you want to learn more about the Libertarian Party, you want to learn more how you can run for office, and you got to get to lp.org. Contact your state party. They'll tell you what it's like to run for office in your state. It's different in every state. It's not impossible in any state. You just need to get in touch, and you'll get some great guidance. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a pet parent? If so, you'll want to stay up to date on the latest tech gadgets and advances for your canine or feline friend. With a ton of apps, websites, tech toys, and more, you'll want to be in the know when it comes to the real treasures and the duds. For that information, listen for Pet Lover Geek with host Lorian Clemens. We test and discuss what's hot and what's not on the pet front, so you'll be better informed. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
What makes a great leader? Most have a vision, one that starts beyond the resources available and continues from that point into developing a solid plan, organization, and company. Leadership issues are discussed each week on Voltcast, Illuminating Leadership with host Jeff Smith. Jeff has years of experience as a leader and executive coach, and his guests will bring you information that can help a team of any size. Listen every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Guys, welcome back to the show. I want to talk to you a little bit about taxation used to provide something that you don't need. I want to talk about a specific kind of taxation. It's this one step removed taxation, right? You have one type of taxation where
you pay taxes and then you get something in return. And maybe the thing you get is not very good. And maybe it's not very effective, but it's at least it's kind of like for you. But there's this other type of taxation, excuse taxation, where some other third party, some other third situation is used as the excuse for why you need to be taxed. Here's an example. Take a look at the drug war right now. You have a lot of people who are in prison. And that seems like it's bad for them. And it also seems like it's bad for you because you have to pay for it. And so you're thinking to yourself, well, if it's bad for them, the person who's receiving the supposed service of being locked up to protect them from themselves, as if, you know, prison is somehow much better than marijuana or something like that. Suppose you have that person over there who is clearly worse off. You have you who's worse off because you're getting taxed. And you say, how could that exist? Who's benefiting? I'll tell you who's benefiting. The other person. The person that we're not thinking about. The private prison company. The private prison companies have spent a lot of time and a lot of money lobbying Congress, state legislatures, governors, etc., to try to keep the drug war going. Why? Because when people get locked up, those prisons make money. When people don't get locked up, those prisons don't make money. If somehow the drug war became successful, like it scared people so bad that no one ever did any drugs ever again, those companies would lose money. So we have A, a conflict of interest, and B, we have somebody else who's benefiting financially from something that's hurting you financially and hurting the other person in terms of their civil liberties. That's the thing that happens a lot. We see a lot of companies that create a non-existent problem, insist that people solve it, and then charge you for it. Here's the other even more famous example. You have weapons companies. Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman. They make expensive weapons. And when people buy those weapons, they make a lot of money. If people don't buy those weapons, they don't really make any money. Now ask yourself this, how do they get people to buy those weapons? How do they get the government to steal money from you to buy those weapons? How do they get convinced you that it's totally fine for the government to steal your money and buy a bunch of weapons? Let me ask you this. What if there was free and peaceful trade going on everywhere right now? There's no real reason for these big, giant, expensive weapons. And all of a sudden, Northrop said, listen, you got to buy a bunch of weapons for us. What are you going to say? You're going to say, hell no. Absolutely not. You cannot have $5,000 a year from me to buy for this nonsense because it's ridiculous. So what do they need to do? Again, they need to create the problem. They need to convince the government that they need to get involved in the Middle East, in other civil wars. In fact, sometimes the weapons companies hit the jackpot. Not long ago in Syria, you had groups armed by the Pentagon fighting other groups armed by the CIA. Now, we as taxpayers are saying, whoa, that's a waste of our money. But the weapons companies are saying the opposite. They're saying, look, both sides are using, we can't lose. The more that these sides buy and kill each other and all that kind of stuff, the better off we are. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and look at their stock prices, which when there is an unnecessary war, always go up. And if you think that the stock investors can't figure that out, then I think you're wrong. I'll leave it at that. Creating problems and then charging you to fix them, or charging you to fix totally non-existent problems, is the most common technique we're seeing right now. Government schools. You have a non-problem, which is we can sit around pretending that there's not already free private sector education. We can say, we can imagine that human nature is such that if you don't beat people into reading, they're never going to read. We can pretend that the economy, with its massive forces that demands higher education and lower education, that demands competence, is somehow insufficient to get people to want to educate themselves and their kids. We can pretend that. It's not true. And if we pretend that, now we have a problem, a manufactured problem. What happens next? You get charged to fix it. The cost of public schools should be basically zero. It shouldn't be any. And if there are any, it should be basically a room that has videos that people can learn from. You don't need a public school for testing. There's already private sector testing for that. You got your SAT subject test. You have your SAT 1. You have AP tests. There's all kinds of ways. You don't need the school to do the testing and grading. That already happens. And many of those companies have fee waivers for people who can't afford it. You have the instruction already happening. So what exactly do we need public schools for? In my opinion, nothing. That's why we've seen – here's what really to me tells how – much of a scam this is. We've already seen that on average, entirely unskilled amateurs who don't know, who've never done education before, who don't haven't worked with students, haven't had any classroom training, don't know what's going on, outperforming the professionals who are given all the resources and training that they could need. Homeschool parents right now, again, these are people who don't know, you know, who theoretically shouldn't know what they're doing, but apparently do because they're massively outperforming the professional teachers in public schools. This trick of charging you for a not real problem is happening in all different parts of government, and you just need to look at who's benefiting, because somebody is always benefiting, almost always financial. Occasionally it's something else, but most of the time it's financial. And before you say, well, teachers don't make that much money, true, but guess who does? Pearson's, textbook companies. The people that make that god useless Common Core program. It's a program that in my education business, we don't even allow it, is how bad we consider it. Those companies make a lot of money, and those companies depend on a public school to make any money, and here's why. Homeschool parents don't buy it. Why? They love their kids. It's just that simple. They care about their kids, and they will not give their kids 10th-rate garbage and call it education. Homeschool parents will not support nonsense like Common Core because they're not going to do that to their own kids. Yeah, they'll do it to somebody else's kids maybe. They're not going to do it to their own kids. And so these companies that make millions and millions of dollars selling garbage, they need to fabricate the problem in the first place in order that they can pretend to fix it. These companies spend a lot of money, by the way, advertising in ways that don't make any sense. If you pay attention to advertising, now I know not everybody pays attention to advertising. I do. I listen to ads very carefully. TV ads, radio ads, computer ads, internet ads, all that kind of stuff. If you listen carefully, you'll notice companies like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman advertising. And that's weird. They're using mass blanket advertising to sell what, like $100 million fighter plane or a whole fleet of them? Is that something that you're going to buy? Or do you know a lot of people that are going to buy it? Is blanket advertising really the way to advertise that? I mean, the only people who are going to buy it work in Congress. Targeting them with lobbying makes sense. Why bother with the blanket advertising? Here's what they realize. If they don't do that advertising, that inexplicable advertising where they advertise aircraft carriers to the general public who's clearly not ever going to buy it, it's getting us to consider them not the enemy. When people figure out what these companies are doing, that they're just using war as an excuse to take money from American civilians and give it to American companies, when they realize that, they start to view companies, these government contractors, as the enemy. And rightly so, because they are taking your money. They're using government to take your money. but they're pulling the strings. When people realize that, they start hating them. And so they put out this bizarre preemptive advertising to make themselves seem like a good and positive company that's making all these wonderful weapons for wars that we shouldn't be in the first place. So what do you do? What do we do? How do we get past this situation in which people are using these, you know, this once removed form of theft on you? Well, you got to get political. In my opinion, political libertarians, that's people who run for office, and technological libertarians, it's people who, you know, make technologies like Bitcoin, we have to work together. And we can. And if we do, it's going to change the entire landscape. If we do, companies like that aren't going to be able to use the government as a mechanism to steal money. The only way for companies to get money when political libertarians and technological libertarians are working together is to actually provide a service or a product that people want. We'll talk a little bit more about some of that right after this break. But first, I know a lot of you guys have thought about running for office and you're so close, but you're nervous, or you know, maybe you think you're afraid that's going to take too much time or whatever. Here's the fact. Sometimes all you have to do to win is show up. You heard that with our last guest, Aaron Wright. But he's not the only one that's happened to it. It happens a lot. Not just to libertarians, it happens to Democrats and Republicans. And once they're there, well, when it's Democrats and Republicans, they start restricting your freedom. But if it's you, you can start fighting for all of our freedoms, including your own. And if you want to learn how to do that, please get to lp.org. Connect with your state party, find out what it takes to run for office. It's going to be one of the best. It for me, it was the best decision I ever made running for office. And I know you're going to get so much out of it. And that website, again, lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Over the last week, a lot of folks have asked about the idea of Bitcoin creating freedom. Because they're just asking the simple question, how does using a cryptocurrency or some other type of currency, how does that relate, how does that have anything to do with freedom? And there's a few different things that people focus on. I mean, a lot of times people will say that when you have something like the Federal Reserve printing money at whatever rate it wants to, then the value of your savings decreases. If you have a lot of money saved up for retirement in dollars, the value of that decreases because the Federal Reserve keeps printing too much money. And they can say, well, if you had your savings, you know, if you're one of the lucky people that had their savings in Bitcoin, you know, you're probably pretty rich right now. You're probably doing pretty well. And I would like to remind you that the Libertarian Party can always use donations to fund many of the, you know, the types of outreach that we do. But there is, in addition to that idea of non-inflation, there's this other thing, the voluntary aspect of it. Suppose that we continue as we are right now, in which the people who are making cryptocurrencies keep on making them more and more and more secure, more and more untraceable, more and more secret and private. That seems to be the direction that it's going in, while the government sits there and wonders what to do, which seems to be what they're doing. If let's say that keeps on happening to the point where a lot of us just have money in Bitcoin or some other competing currency, and the government doesn't know how much anybody has, what's the government going to do? How does it get any money? Well, it has a few options, right? It could use property tax, and that is an option. But it's a tricky one, because if you start adding a lot of property tax, now you're kicking people out of their homes. A lot of times the property taxes go so high that it becomes higher than what the mortgage was that people bought it under, and now they can no longer afford to live in their own homes. It's one of the many tragedies of property taxes. So there's that option. You could say they might try to use income tax, but here's the thing about income tax. Here's the other weakness of property tax, my mistake. If you're not in America, they can't do anything. See, right now, if you leave the continental U.S., if you move to Canada or Cayman Islands or wherever, you still actually have to pay U.S. taxes. U.S. government is one of the few governments that does that. But if no one knew how much of anything you had, then you don't need to pay any tax. They don't have any property, you don't need to pay property taxes. But if nobody knows what your income is, they can't really charge you income tax either. How are they going to figure it out? If you're rogue bank account that is not backed up by any state, that is not open to any state auditors of any kind, if it's just locked down, then what are they going to do? Now, some of us are saying, oh my God, if there's no way for them to get money, then there won't be any roads and there won't be any. Actually, that's not true. And that's the beauty of Bitcoin. That's the beauty of any currency that isn't available to the state to be controlled. If you want to buy orange juice with Bitcoin, guess what you have to do? You have to give the person selling you some orange juice a Bitcoin or a fraction or whatever. Bitcoin doesn't allow you to magically steal. It simply keeps it private how much you have. If you use Bitcoin to buy a thing, you actually do have to give that person Bitcoin. How does that apply to roads? Well, that means that you can still charge people to use a road. We have the technology for that. I mean, EasyPass is not some new technology. It's been there for a long time. And it keeps improving. What that means is now the government can only charge you for things that you voluntarily will pay for. And that could be different for different people. Listen, I would never pay for a government-run school working in education. I've just seen how bad they are. But realistically, I probably wouldn't pay for most private schools either. Working in education, I've seen how bad they are. But I would pay for roads. I would. I would pay to drive on a road. I have. I mean, I just drove up to Philadelphia this weekend. I paid to drive on the roads. I didn't, you know, I wasn't furious about it. I was like, here's something I'm using. I'm happy to pay for it. I was annoyed because I knew that my money probably wasn't going to the roads and it was probably going to something stupid, but, you know, I'd be willing to pay to use a road. It's not a big deal. Let's say you're the type of person who really wants to use government schooling. Cool. If you have all your money in something that's untraceable like Bitcoin, you can still pay for a thing. And what that means now is government has to operate like a service provider, like a business. It has to give you something you want to get you to voluntarily give them the money. And if they're not giving you something you want, you won't give them any money. Realistically, if you think about it, and I know a lot of you guys like to think way ahead of me. If you're thinking about it, what does that also mean? It means that you could have actually competing service providers. Let's say that you really want to make sure you have the best fire protection ever. You might buy fire protection from one company. If there's a better one that comes around, you might switch. That's right. You could have 5 fire departments in your area. Where I live, there's 3 Whole Foods in walking distance of here. If I don't like one Whole Foods, I can go to a different one. I don't even know how many Starbucks there are. And there's many other supermarkets as well. I mean, there's many different options. And see, that's the great thing. When you allow these services that we think have to be state-created to be competitive, where we think you have to force people to pay for it to make it voluntary, now they're going to compete. It wouldn't surprise me, by the way, if openly competitive public schools that actually had to compete to get your money, it wouldn't surprise me if they became good. Because if they have to get money from you instead of the school board members, you know, getting bribes from the idiots that make Common Core, if they have to get money from you, from the customer, instead of from the manipulators, if they have to get money from the people who use the service, not the lobbyists who benefit when the people mismanage funds and buy the wrong thing, well, then they actually have to improve. There's nothing wrong with the people who run and work at public schools. I know a lot of them are brilliant people. They're just in a backward system where they can't do what they need to be doing. Honestly, the same thing on the school board. If the people on the school boards weren't responding to the wrong customers, if you were their customers instead of the textbook companies, realistically, they might do a much better job. I mean, they might not, but they might. There are very few things that the government does that are good and that you wouldn't pay for. The things it does that are bad, you wouldn't pay for, right? If somebody says, listen, I want to lock up this guy, and you say, for what? And you say, well, he was smoking marijuana. What are you going to say? No. If they say, no, just give me $200 and I'll lock this guy up, you're going to say, obviously not. I'm going to use my, you know, $200 or my fifth of a Bitcoin or whatever, or I guess tenth of a Bitcoin now. I'm going to use that for something else because I can't imagine anything more just a stupider way to spend my money than that guy whose current only skill is locking people up for no reason. Maybe he'll develop a better skill. You know, maybe he'll develop some. If he's so good at building prisons, maybe he's good at building houses too. Maybe he's good at repairing stuff. Maybe he's good at bringing in discipline. He might be a great babysitter or something like that. I mean, who knows? The point is that people can either provide something that you would voluntarily pay for and is good, or something that you would never voluntarily pay for. By making government voluntary, either through technical innovation or political innovation, or more likely the two of them working together, we restrict government to the things that you actually want. And if you want nothing, and I know there's a lot of you out there, and you know, I'm kind of pretty much on board with you myself. If you want nothing from the government, then you just pay them nothing and buy your stuff from someone else. That's fine. And that's going to be a system that benefits all of us. It is not as far away as people think. I know the government spokespeople want you to believe it's a million years off. It is not. And if you haven't already done so, start looking into whatever, you know, cryptocurrency or other forms of payment that you're doing. The more of us that adopt it, the better off we all are. Thanks so much, guys, for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.